Savior, may I learn to love thee, walk the path that thou hast shown. Pause to help and lift another, finding strength beyond my own.
Gay Mormon Stories is a production of Mormon Stories Podcast and the Open Stories Foundation. To support this podcast, please donate today at GayMormonStories.org. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards building a community of support for gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and queer Mormons. And thanks for listening.
You've told me about, you know, how your family formed. And you told me that you could only, you know, you really were surprised you were able to have one child. How was that for you guys to sort of get used to being a small family in general? And how did that kind of impact you guys being a Mormon family where everyone's encouraged to have lots of kids?
Yeah, I felt that I wanted a big family. I wanted... Well, not as big as mine.
not 15 kids.
No. I have 15 siblings, so I'm one of 16. So yeah, I did not want that, but I definitely wanted, we didn't even put a number on it really. We just thought, you know, well, we have one and we know we want one more. And after that, if we feel like we want one more, that we want, you know, but in, secretly I did. I wanted about six, which okay. Now seems like outrageous. I don't even know how I would handle that. But, yeah, we did. We struggled a lot through that, feeling like inadequate. I just kind of felt like I had to say, well, I have one, but I have one, you know.
But tell me, did you, when you had the one, then mm-hmm. This happened to my friends. They just totally thought they couldn't have kids, and mm-hmm. they even got this special permission to go on a mission, and they went on a mission, and then all of a sudden she had this miracle pregnancy, right?
Yeah.
But then they ended up having three kids, and I don't remember what the details were. But when you had John, after thinking you couldn't have kids, mm-hmm. did that make you think, now I can have kids?
Yeah.
Everything's fine?
Yeah, I thought, well,
I can have all I want?
Yep. I thought, what do the doctors know? So I had set out to make this plan. I would have two right away, because all of my siblings were all so close in age. I have a sister who's just 14 months older than I am, and a brother that's just 14 months younger than I am. So I loved that I had kind of a posse at my school and okay. that, you know, that, we were just all so close. And I don't know, I liked that, as an adult, but you know, as kids, we fought like crazy, but I wanted that. And so we started, we never prevented. We just, we're gonna take the next one as it came, again, because we thought John was a miracle. Maybe we shouldn't like stop another miracle.
Okay.
That was our thinking. So after a little bit, we started to wonder, like, well, things aren't happening, but I had one, so we know I can have one. So we started infertility, and that is.
You mean you started doing evaluations to figure out why you weren't getting pregnant again?
Yes. Okay, so I had a bit of, after having John, I lost it. And I guess you could say it's an extreme amount of weight. I'm about 5'5", 5'4", 5'5", in between there, depending on if I'm slouching or not. And I got down about 95 pounds because of nursing. And with that, it affected my hormone levels, my FHS levels, and follicle hormone stimulation. And so, and I also discovered that I had, like, varicose veins lining my ovaries and uterus. So I kind of had a bunch working against me. We had some other things, but after going to infertility clinics and getting tested, we learned we have a really huge uphill battle. And so we did some treatments, and they all failed. I mean, like, middle of the night, shooting hormones into your stomach. The medicines were really intense and the treatments were really intense, but
so you decided to really go for the all-out effort at mm-hmm. treating infertility. So at some point you went from just deciding to let it happen to really proactively try to force it to happen almost.
And there are so many ups and downs. I don't know if anybody else can relate to this, but infertility is it can be so devastating when it doesn't work. And it was an emotional roller coaster, and we tried and tried and tried. We did it. We tried. We gave it a great effort. And when John was 8, we were approached by someone thinking that they might want to give us their baby for adoption. And here I thought, well, this is a lot easier. Goodbye being a lab rat. I was so done poking myself with needles and setting my alarm clock for 12:01 to have in the middle of the night, you know, and at 4 o'clock doing another injection. And, you know, I just was kind of over it. And I was thinking, this is it. This is the better option. So we found out very early on in her pregnancy. And so we started planning for that. And then about 6 weeks before she had the baby, she decided to keep it. And I think that was kind of like a point for me where I just was like, it'd been so devastating and so much heartbreak. I just threw my hands up and thought, moving on. Let's be happy for the one we have. Here's the thing, though. I'm really, really glad for all of that experience, especially with the infertility, because I think it's one of those situations that can make or break a relationship. And for us, it sealed the deal. It solidified our unity as a family. Then once we lost the adoption, the baby to adoption, and we had gone through LDS social services, and we tried. So one day, I have to tell you this super sweet story. One day I was cooking at the stove. It was conference weekend and John was 8 years old. And it was a Saturday and we had conference in the background. Usually on Saturday we didn't sit and watch it. We would just have it going. And And so I'm cooking at the stove, and let this be known, I'm a horrible cook. I was probably burning something at the stove, who knows. And John came up to me and he said, "Mom, can I talk to you?" I said, "Sure, bud, what's up?" I just kept cooking. And he said, "I don't think that Heavenly Father answers my prayers. I don't think Heavenly Father loves me." And I was like, "What? Why would my 8-year-old just say that? What have I said your whole life? That you're perfect, that Heavenly Father loves you, that, you know, I've been teaching him all the—" I just pushed the food off the stove and turned around and faced my little boy. And I just said, "Well, John, why do you think that?" And he said, "I've been praying for a baby brother or a baby sister as long as I can remember, Mom. My whole life, all I've wanted is a brother or sister. And I think he doesn't hear me." And at the time, we just lost the baby and I was so devastated. And part of me just wanted to like melt and, because he was crying a little bit, and into his arms and cry with him and, you know, say, "Yes, we've been forsaken." But something just was like, no, Meg, like, calm down. And I heard myself saying, "Well, you know, maybe we all need to change our attitudes, John. Maybe instead of praying that Heavenly Father will bless us with another baby, let's pray that we can carry this burden. This is sad. It's a sad thing. And let's just pray that we can be strong enough to carry it." And that did not just like come to me. I mean, those were not my thoughts. So he just kind of like looked at me a little questioning and was like, "Okay," like that wasn't a satisfactory answer. But the next day, I mean, it did happen to be general conference, and President Monson was speaking, and he was talking about burdens and, you know, always people praying to have their burdens lifted or their burdens taken away. And he said, and John was on the floor coloring at the time, and he said, "Instead of us asking for our burdens to be taken away, we should start asking to be strong enough to carry them." And John whipped his head around and said, "Mom, that's just what you said yesterday."
Wow.
And I said, "Oh, you're right. See, maybe we should really give this a good try." And so we did. We started praying that we would just not be sad about it anymore, that we would just be happy with the family that we have. And I gotta say, like, we didn't even realize we were carrying this dark cloud around. It just lifted, and we all felt better, and we all changed our attitudes toward it. And we just moved on super happy. And now I can see all the benefits of an only child. It's so easy, and it's great. And I can just focus on him, and now I can see the positive. So,
And it's also a nice thing in life to see the benefit in your own, in the path that you have, especially when you can't really change it, right?
Exactly. It's a
And that
great.
applies to a lot of things, including your sexual orientation, right? I mean, it's
Yes.
why sit around and wish it was different and
Yes.
instead just embrace it. So maybe that was an important lesson that carried over towards other issues to come.
I think so. I really do.
Yeah.
And we really kind of bonded even stronger as a family and grew as a family. And going through at the time what seemed like a trial, and kind of coming out of it happy and okay and totally happy. Like most Mormon families might not be happy, or maybe they would eventually get there, but a lot of people look at me when they like confused. You're happy you only have one child? And I said, yes, I am.
Yeah.
So I don't, I think that did help for later on in life.
I think that it's too bad that people did have to look at you judgmentally as if, oh, you should be unhappy about this. In the same way that, I mean, skipping to the future, if people are telling you, oh, you should be unhappy that your son's gay,
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
what an annoying advice,
You
right?
have no idea. I don't know how to
Yeah.
react to that when people tell me, oh, what's the word that they use?
Well, they say burden too. You used burden a while ago and try not
Burden.
to look on burden negative, but I think when we're moving on to this issue, we don't even want to call it a burden. We want to call it there's a challenge put on us by society, and that's kind of a burden. But let's skip now then to, the events that led up to you learning about John being gay.
Well, what would you like to know?
Well, describe how you found out.
So it's interesting. In seventh grade, I think kids are becoming a lot more aware. John is old for his grade. He's turned 13 right before he went to seventh grade. Being a late August baby, I kept him back. And so kids were just, I don't know, becoming more aware, becoming more socially aware. And a lot of kids kept asking him, like, if he was gay. And he would say, what? No, why would you ask me that? And they're like, I don't know, I just good to know. So who do you like? And he would say, well, that's personal. And he didn't understand. So he came to me and he said, what is it about me that makes people think that I'm gay? And I said, well, probably because you're super nice. You're a gentleman, you're sweet, you're kind to everybody. I don't know, John, I can't say. But I think it's maybe because you're just crazy nice. For me, I always associated gay people with like the nicest people I ever met, so that's what I thought of. So that's my answer I gave him. I said, I think it's because you're just really nice. And one time he was practicing in the choir room and he was barring her piano, which is right next to the dance studio. And he was practicing a song from Les Mis. And he was accompanying himself and singing. And he was all by himself. He didn't know that, the girls were dancing next door could hear him. So he was just letting it go. He was just singing as beautifully as he can. And I guess this just huge gaggle of girls came running in. And we're like, oh my gosh, you're amazing, and just giving him a bunch of attention for it. And he said he was really flattered, and he really liked that. So fast forward to the next day, one of those girls came up to him and said, are you gay? And he said, why do people keep asking me this? Like, no. And she said, well, I talked to my mom, and I told her about you, that you're this super cute guy that was singing and that you're amazing. And she told me, oh, he's gay, don't even try. And she asked her mom, why do you think he's gay? And she said, Well, no straight guy would ever play the piano and sing Les Misanges, just so you know. And I thought, so she said, well, I'm gonna ask him. So she went the next day and she asked him, and he was like, no. And so she said, oh, well, then who do you like? That was the follow-up question every time. So when he came to me and told me this, I was like, well, what if you were? Do people just ask this? Like, are you ready? I was, and one, what if you were? Two, that mom just kind of like stereotyped everybody. I don't know, and I was a little upset, but he seemed to just think it was funny, and it didn't offend him or bother him at all.
Okay, so the kids at school were asking him in sort of a non-judgmental way. It's like, oh, if you're gay, it's okay with me, but are you gay? And he just didn't he didn't really identify as that, but he wasn't terribly traumatized by being asked that, or
Oh, not at all. Not at all, because I grew up in a different generation, so I did ask him that. I said, does that bother you that people think that? And he's like, no. Why should I be offended? And I said, no, no,
but at some point you said, well, what if you are gay? Did you actually say that?
no, I
Oh,
didn't.
I thought you said, thought, wondered, or asked
No,
him.
I was thinking like, what if he was? Why, in my mind, I was like kind of upset with this mom, even though I didn't verbally communicate with that with him. I just thought, oh, well. But in my mind, I was thinking, well, what if he was not John in particular, but somebody? These kids just ask whoever if they're gay. Are they ready to talk about that? I didn't say, well, I think John might be gay. What if John is gay?
Okay,
Would
but
that
you were
bother him?
surprised at how nonchalant the students at the school were being about it.
Yeah, and the mom in particular, and how she just kind of labeled him.
Yeah.
And
Well, it's funny
she.
because there are kids who aren't gay who probably seem gay, right? There is this,
Exactly.
for every kid that you think is gotta be gay, right? Only
Yeah.
really a half of them are, or there's a lot of straight people who end up with the gay stereotypes because I don't know if they have the gay gene, they just didn't turn out gay, or they just have some of the, or whatever. But there's a lot of stereotypical gay traits, right? And a lot of straight people have these traits, so it's easy to just the stereotype is and often not helpful, especially for those kids who maybe get tired of it when they're really not gay. Unless they sort of embrace it and realize that they can get lots of girlfriends because girls like the ways,
Yes,
a lot of girls like the way gay guys are,
they
so
could
yeah.
use that to their advantage. And I was
Yeah.
thinking that about John. I was like, wow, he's got like girls really like him. He could really
Yeah.
use all of his charm to his advantage. But yeah, so it kind of became a little bit of a vocabulary in 7th grade, and I didn't really I just listened. I just thought, well, that's interesting. I wonder why they think that about you. I guess it really became a greater vocabulary when we found out about Andy, my sister's soon-to-be fiance. I mean, they had a ring picked out and everything, and we had
Yeah.
Skyped with them, and John had spoken with Andy a little bit on Facebook, just saying, "Hey, I'm Kylie's nephew, John." I felt like I wanted to introduce myself, and so they had a bit of a conversation on Facebook.
Okay.
And when I found out about Andy, I just felt like I should tell John that they broke up and why. I felt like it was another opportunity to just be, I don't know, I just felt like it was a life opportunity to be able to talk about it some more.
Yeah, so you had a desire to, you already had an empathy for gay people, then
I think I
you.
did. I didn't I wasn't I didn't quite get it. Like, I didn't quite get everything. I didn't realize a lot of things. I didn't realize there was a lot of discrimination. I honestly thought it's 2013. People when I didn't think I honest to goodness didn't realize that people still thought it was a life choice. I thought surely we've moved past that. I didn't it just wasn't on my radar, but for me personally, I did. I had a lot of, I guess, tenderness toward gay people. I didn't have an openly gay friend, but or anything like that. I'm embarrassed to say it. Just the injustices were not on my radar.
Right.
I didn't realize.
Okay, but still, when it came up, you have enough appreciation for human diversity anyway
Yes.
that motivated you to just be super frank with your son about Andy.
Yeah, so at the time, John still didn't really, hadn't had his epiphany moment, if you will, which we'll talk about in a minute, I suppose. So I was in the car, I picked him up from school, and I said, "Hey, John, I just wanted to let you know that Kylie and Andy have called off their wedding." And John was so sad, and he said, "Oh gosh, why?" And I said, "Well, I just, Andy's gay, and he doesn't feel like he can marry a woman." And John kind of looked at, he just kind of leaned against the car door and said, "Mom, do you know what I think about being gay?" And I said, "No, what do you think?" He goes, "I don't think there's anything wrong with it." And I said, "Well, I'm really glad to hear that." he said that there's no difference. And to him, he in his mind, he thought, "Oh, now I have a gay friend." He didn't think anything that was weird. It didn't bother him.
Where did he get that attitude? Was
I
it just
have no
his
idea.
school environment is so tolerant, or was this, is he just naturally open to diversity too? Where do
Yeah.
you think he drew that sort of progressive viewpoint?
Well,
Since he wasn't applying it to himself yet, particularly.
yeah, I might have mentioned this earlier in the podcast, and I don't know if I did, but I've always sort of been in awe of John ever since he was very little. I never felt like I taught him to be tolerant. I just realized that he was. And just by the way he was, he wouldn't, he was so tender toward animals and ants and people in general, and he didn't understand. I don't know. I didn't ever try to like hide anything from him, and we talked about things, and when he would learn about the first civil rights movement, it just touched him deeply. He read a book on the Holocaust, and he couldn't fathom it. I think he was just born gifted with this acceptance.
Yeah.
So, and that really kind of why he's so open, I think he, in his beautiful childlike mind, thought everybody will be accepting of me because that's just how he sees the world. So he assumes the world will see him that way.
Yeah.
But he's just that way. That's just, I couldn't even pinpoint it. I couldn't even tell you there were lessons learned or opportunities here or there. He just sees it clearly, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
Kind
I
of.
mean, I have to assume that even though you weren't constantly voicing pro-gay messages in your household, you were at least voicing tolerance, acceptance, diversity, important values that have always been important to you about accepting other people. And so it's not a very big stretch to apply this to a new group of people, even if you haven't been so much exposed to their particular issues or even that aware that they exist until this point in time, right?
I suppose I'd like to
So,
take some credit, but mostly I just think he came this way.
well,
I don't
so it
know.
was a little both.
Maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you, but
Well,
I
you got
don't.
some good genes.
Yeah.
So then was there more then that sort of relevant leading up to when John told you?
Well, about the week before, so this was a couple months that I
Yeah.
had told him
T
about Andy.
tell me the story in the sort of the order you learned it.
Okay. A
Instead
week.
of the order it happened, the order it came to your awareness.
Okay. The week a week before he came out, and this was in March, he'd been asking questions. He said, "What is bisexual?" And I would just explain to him. I said, "Oh, well, from my understanding, it's that if you like a boy, if you're a boy, you can like boys or girls." And he said, "Well, if you're bisexual, wouldn't you just do what society expects of you?" And I said, "Well, that certainly might be the easier path, but I don't know enough about that. I'm sorry, I can't say." And but I I didn't know enough. So we were kind of having this discussion, and he was asking me questions that I honestly felt like I didn't have the answers to. And so that went on for about a week. He was like, what is, he was, because he was doing some research, and he probably wanted to know what I knew, what I thought of it, maybe testing the waters a little bit. Because this was in the middle of his, I, unbeknownst to me, he was talking with Andy. He was doing online research. He was, he had been, started to have this a bit of a self-discovery, but this is that was unbeknownst to me. So here he's asking me these questions. Well, on Friday, by the end of the week, I'd been answering all these questions that I, to the best of my knowledge, and I said, John, why this interest? I was kind of like, what, I wonder, why he's so interested in this? Maybe there's someone at school. I don't know. So later that night, I was cleaning carpet. So we had rented. We had usually had people clean our own carpets, but they always left stains. And I had this freakish ability to get stains out. Like everybody needs a gift in life. I can't cook. I mean, I can't do a lot of things, but I can get a stain out of anything. So I asked Jake if we could rent one of those machines. I'm gonna do it myself. And
Okay.
I did. Okay, so I have a gift. So I'm in there in my room, just like cleaning the carpets and thinking I'm gonna do this forever. I do such a better job. And the
Yeah.
machine was so loud. No, okay, so I was in John's room and I was doing John's room at the time. And this machine was so loud, and John had said, "Mom, would you?" He's screaming at me. "Do you want to play a game of Hangman?" And he has the iPad, and he has a Hangman set up. And I said, "Sure, but I can't really hear you. Let's sign the letters to each other." So we started playing this game of Hangman. It's taking forever, and I'm
So
signing.
you're signing because you guys know the deaf alphabet, the ASL
Yes,
alphabet.
ASL. I know a little bit. John knows a lot more than I do. He'd been learning ASL all year, or he started
Okay.
learning ASL a few months prior, starting in January, I believe. So we were signing to each other and I couldn't quite make out what it was. And at this point, I mean, I had finished with his room and moved on to my room. So we're in my room, and I just was getting started, and I realized, oh, this isn't one word. This is a phrase. And we finished up, and it said, and again, the machine's still going, so it's super loud. And I read, "I am like Andy." And John had gotten into the office this year, so I thought he meant Andy from The Office because he's so musical. And I kind of said, "From The Office," like really loud over the machine. And he just looked at me and just shook his head. And no, and over the top of that, traced with his finger in all caps the word gay. And I just turned my machine off, and I faced him, shoulder squared on, and I said, "John, are you telling me now that right now that you're gay?" And he just kind of closed his eyes and shook his head yes. And I'm trying to go back to that place in my mind and my heart because I know that's an important place. I learned a lot from it. I've moved on from this. So you'll forgive me. It'll be hard. So I can't remember exactly what happened those next seconds, but I went over and I grabbed him in a big hug, and I don't remember what I said to him. We just both sunk down on my bed, and we were holding hands, and I just looked at him, and I just started crying. I just started crying because I was all I'd ever heard when I was younger. Again, I was a little. I didn't. I was. I hoped the world was more accepting, but I saw Glee. I had watched Glee, and I'd watched, how awful people can be, and I assumed it was still that same way. And so, as much as I didn't it didn't mind I didn't bother me. I didn't want my son to go through anything like that. So I was
So
telling.
what came rushing into your head basically was the images of pain
Yes.
that you kind of perceived that could happen to him. That's sort of
Yes, I was so worried, and I just started sobbing, and I was trying to talk through my tears, and he was like, "Mom," and he put his hand on my shoulders, and he was like, and I just said, "Look, John, I need to say something. I want this to be very clear. I'm not crying because I'm disappointed in you, buddy. I am so proud of you. I'm so proud of you. You're so brave." And I said, "This is a hard road. This is such a hard road, and I don't want that for you. I want your life to be easy."
Yeah.
And I just said, "I'm just sad for this hard road that you're on, but just know that I love you, and this changes nothing." And he kind of had a funny question. He said, "Could it have changed?" And I said, "No, but I think sometimes it does. I don't know, but I just..." So I was telling him, I was immediately thinking he might hate himself because of this. So I went into like build up John mode. "John, you're perfect. John, you're okay. You're..." And he kind of put his hand on my hand, and he said, "Mom, I know. I'm okay with this." And that just stopped me in my tracks. I was like, "What? I know what my church teaches. You know what my church teaches.
Yeah.
What? You know what?" And I just was like, "Oh." And so I needed to listen now. So I said, "Well, what do you mean? What do you think about this?" And he said, "When I realized it, and when I knew it, after he learned some things about it, he said, I started learning about what's called..." Mom, there's this thing called the closet. And I kind of chuckled. I said, "Yeah, I know. I've heard of it." And I thought people stayed there to protect themselves. So I didn't realize that it was a self-harming place. And he
Yeah.
said, "I've been doing a lot of research, and Mom, that is not the place for me. When I found out, I want to shout it from the rooftops. I want everyone to know, and I want to be a beacon for others who might be in the closet, and to let them know that it's okay, and you can come and be by me, and we can be friends." And I was like, "What?" So in my mind, I'm trying to like catch up to him. I'm trying to like let my mind go there and say, "Okay, John's gonna start shouting this from the rooftops. What is gonna happen to him? How will people react?" And here I am, afraid, thinking, "Let's all stay in the closet. Okay, you're gonna be loved, and we're gonna love you, and we're gonna tell you you're perfect every day. But like, can no one hurt you?" Because I was thinking, people
Yeah.
do get beat up and bullied, so I was afraid. But John's courage, I had to kind of, I couldn't make sense of it. Again, because I was raised Mormon, I knew what the Mormon Church said. I honestly thought, I honest to goodness, and this is, again, I'm going to be ashamed of this, but at the time, I thought that this was a trial given to you to overcome, just like maybe alcoholism or whatever. You just have to overcome this, and it'll be lift your burden will be lifted once you die. Where did I get this lesson? I have no idea, but that's something that I knew at the
So
time.
this was what was sort of going on in your head. In other words, you were some kind of miles away from where John was on the issue, in a sense,
Totally,
because you
totally.
were thinking, oh yeah, the closet's a place to stay for protection, and
Yes.
that's okay, we can know here, and John's just already way past that, right?
Yeah, I mean,
He's
light
got it figured
years.
out, and so he's not. Maybe even John is kind of assuming, I mean, not even realizing all the baggage you're bringing, right, to the issue. And
Yes.
so.
Oh, he had no idea my mind was there. He assumed I would be where he was, where what he learned, and I had to get there and get there fast, because I had a kid that wasn't struggling with self-loathing, with depression, with worrying. He had to overcome this. I wasn't. That is not the kid that I had to deal with. So I was prepared to deal with that. I was not. Well, I thought I was prepared to deal with
Which is kind
that.
of amazing, because it's kind of hard to grow up Mormon and realize you're gay and not have some health self-loathing. I mean, that's so the fact that he somehow managed that is really, really amazing and beautiful, because that's what we want for our kids. We don't want them
Yes.
to loathe themselves.
Oh.
And just to see that he was able to go there, And somehow he must have had heard some bad messages, but he at least didn't hadn't internalized them substantially by then.
I hope
And
I yeah I
maybe in his little, in primary, they had just hadn't talked about it yet, or in priesthood. And so maybe he came out just in time to not really hear the preponderance of negative messages that people do get at church. I mean, or maybe your ward, people just wasn't obsessed with the issue as much as other wards. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate with that. I feel like this is how it should happen for all families. I feel like we have gained so many years. There's a lot of years and years of just struggle and self-loathing and that we just get to skip. I feel so fortunate. I
Get out of
really,
jail free. Not
yes.
quite, but
Yes.
with just a little, that's just a little penalty. The
Right.
penalty's yet to come, maybe, but yeah, there's still some societal homophobia he's going to face, and you're facing. But yeah, compared to what we really hear about for so many young people and some people that I've interviewed when they're talking about their youth, it's that is a very different place that he was really lucky enough to find himself at and to guide you through.
Yeah,
So,
so it kind of shocked me.
yeah.
So I'm sitting there just kind of literally in shock, and I've heard of people say I went into shock and my body kind of shut down and I couldn't really speak. This is kind of where I was at. I was in literal shock, like what? It didn't make sense. So I was just listening to him and I was like, okay, yes. Okay, John, okay, we can do this. Like, and I know in my mind I'm thinking, how am I going to do this? How am I going to facilitate some sort of, hey everybody, my son is gay and he wants you to know and he's okay with it and we're okay with it. And I was really like, but on the other hand going, oh my gosh, in my church that's like a big sin. I mean, it's like a big deal. And I was just, needless to say, I was in shock and there was just, my heart was broken. And I felt like a physical pain in my chest more than I'd ever felt. So at this point, Jake comes up and because he notices that the machine had been turned off for a long time. So he comes upstairs and he comes in the room and he sees us sitting on the bed and we're both crying. I mean, poor John, he was just crying. He probably wouldn't have cried at all, but he was crying because I was crying. And he said, Mom, why are you crying so much? And you're making me cry. And I was like, I'm just so sorry. I'm sorry. Okay, you're right. And I was just willing myself, stop crying, woman. Stop crying. But I couldn't help it. There's just this, I was in shock. I don't know. Anyway, so I've moved on from this, but I do know I was there. So Jake comes in and he's like, what happened? Why you turn the machine off? What's wrong? Like in the middle of a sentence, what's wrong? What's going on? And I just looked at him, and I just looked at him, and I made like a pained face, I'm sure. And we have a couch in our bedroom, and he sat down on the couch like real slowly, and he was like, guys, what is wrong? He's like, somebody. And neither one of us could speak. John just turned his head; he couldn't even look at Jake. And I said, John, do you want to tell your dad? And John just shook his head yes, still not even looking at him. And I said, do you want me to tell him? And he just shook his head yes. And I said, well, Jake, John has just let me know that he's gay and that he knows it. Because I have to back up a minute. I asked him if he was sure like 17 times. Again, another thing I wish I could take back. Are you sure? Are you sure? How do you know? Are you sure? I laugh, but it's an embarrassed laugh. And he just said, Mom, I know. And so he shared how he knew a little bit. And so by Jake, I said, Jake, he's gay, and he knows he's gay. And Jake just, his face just got kind of went, he was shocked. He was so shocked. And he said, well, John, it's kind of funny now, but he just said, well, John, I don't like tomatoes, but your mom loves tomatoes. It's just something about us. And you're gay, and that's just something about you, and that's okay. And that was his analogy, but he said,
Yeah.
I know, he was kind of like,
Well, bravo. I mean,
There's,
that was a.
yeah, it was a good response, you know, because there's nothing he can do, but I mean, he tries. He has tried. And the tomato's a big deal. If people knew, he has tried everything he can to like tomatoes, because for some reason he feels like he should. That every time he just almost throws up, and it's this horrible ordeal for him. So he's just, I'm just not a tomato lover. So this is
Yeah.
like one of his defining things, but it's just something about him. So that's what he came up with.
Yeah.
And he said, and that's okay. And your mom and I, we love you. So yeah, we hugged, and John just said, I just need to get away, because I'm sitting there crying and I think he couldn't handle it. And so he went outside and just to take a deep breath. And I just looked at Jake like, what does this mean? Oh my gosh. And it to me, that's the moment that it kind of felt like someone has died. The person that I thought John was going to be has died. And what does that mean? And in the moment, it felt all-encompassing, and it felt eternal. And I didn't know if I'd ever get over that. And I would be and I just I don't like talking about these selfish moments, but they were there, and I was so sad. I was just sad, because as a mom, you just have these expectations. And so I was worried too. Oh my gosh, what have I done? I made John leave, because I'm being dumb. So I ran downstairs, and I went out, and I he was just standing out on the curb and just taking deep breaths. And I said, John, I'm so sorry. Am I reacting wrong? I mean, should I be like, how should I be? Should I say, yeah, I've got a gay son? What would be good? I was like, I don't think I'm doing this right, and I don't want you to be sad, and I don't want you to. And I hugged him again. I love you so much. And I didn't have even a second to kind of like digest it. And I just so I brought him inside. I said, come inside. I'm worried. I don't. I just want you to be. I felt like he needed to be supervised from that moment on, for every second for the rest of his life.
Where protection starts.
Yes, I'm overprotective. So I started asking him, what about this girl that he'd always just loved? And he said he was going to wait until she turned 16 before he went on a date, because she was going to be his first date. And I said, I'm so confused. What about this? And John was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I could be bisexual, Mom. I know I did like her. I do like this girl. And so I was just like, okay, I kind of clung to that. Like, yeah, maybe he is. Maybe he's bisexual. And if he's bisexual, then he'll just choose the way his church wants him to, because that's the plan of happiness, right? And I said, well, interestingly enough, I had just read this blog about a guy, and he calls himself the unicorn. His name is Joshua Weed, and he's gay, and he's managed to find this amazing girl, and maybe this girl can be that girl for you. I was trying to talk him out of it, and or making sure he was sure, because I didn't understand. And I was just saying, and oh, this is another part that I regret. Like, there's way too many things. I can't remember, but he was like, okay, I'll read about that, and maybe you're right. Maybe there's just this one person. You might be gay, but there's this one exception to the rule, and maybe that Joshua Week guy found that. And I said, I think they did, and this is what our church believes. But I still love you. Oh, okay. So a lot of tears, a lot of hugs. Remember that I love you. Tuck him in. I love you. I love you. I love you. A million times over. Pat scratch his back.
Yeah.
And shut the door. And then I just melted into a puddle of tears. And because I was sitting inside of a Mormon box, and all the answers I ever had in my life were supposed to come from the scriptures and from prayer. And I was walking around inside of this Mormon box, and there were no answers for me right in that moment when I needed it. And so Jake and I were hugging, and we were like crying together and kind of sad about it. And I said, I just need to. We went to bed. He went to sleep. I couldn't sleep. So I got up, and I just went to my closet because I didn't want John to hear me crying anymore, and I didn't want Jake to hear me crying, and I just needed a, like a moment. I kind of just like broke down and was just thinking, like, why? Why? Because I guess maybe subconsciously I thought that maybe it can be overcome. The church says, like, you're supposed to be able to overcome this. There's the atonement. Like, it's supposed to be taken away. Like, but John wants to be open and he wants to be out. And I was really trying to, like, reconcile all this and think about that. And this very strong feeling, like a loud voice basically yelled at me, call Anessa. Now, Anessa's my sister. She's wonderful in every way. I knew.
So in that moment, you're sort of in this dark moment, feeling totally lost.
Yes.
And you had this, what seemed like a voice, inspiration that you needed to call this particular sister.
Yes. Yeah, and maybe that was my inner self screaming at me. Maybe it was inspiration. Maybe who, I don't know, but I felt like, okay, unbeknownst to me, she had stumbled across LGBT issues and became an ally. She'd been an ally for a year and had learned so much about the science behind it, the discrimination against people, all of the things. But I didn't know all of that. And we had had conversations where she was telling me she supported gay marriage. And I said, well, the church doesn't, you know, I obviously went straight to the church and she was like, do you know that? And we kind of had a bit of an argument about it, like 2 weeks earlier, no lie. It was 2 weeks earlier. And I said, Anessa, you know, you're Mormon, like you gotta, the prophet says the family proclamation. And she's like, I don't care, Meg. They're like my husband, Nick, he has got an uncle. He and his partner had been together for like 27 years and he went into the hospital and they wouldn't let him see him because he's not family. And I said, well, yes, of course that's wrong. That's awful. And I go, it is so wrong that they don't have the same rights. That we can agree on, Anessa. She was like, okay, at least we can agree on something. I said, but like, maybe the laws can change for civil union because like marriage was initially created for procreation. I don't know if that necessarily applies to gay people. And so we were both just kind of having this argument about it. And I was just saying, maybe they can be something else. Like they can have the exact same rights, but they'll just call it like wedded or, you know, but like, they're not going to get married, Anessa. Like people are not going to do that. Cause I at the time was very conservative and I didn't know what I supported or what I would have voted for, but I remember thinking, well, yeah, because I have a prophet telling me this from the family proclamation. And so I just went with it, you know. But you had
a chance to vote in North Carolina, didn't you?
Yes.
Or was that a legislative?
Yes, but Jake and I voted against it in support of, well, it would have been for in support of gay marriage. But it was because we didn't care for the way the law was written, not because we supported gay marriage. At the time.
So you ended up voting a way you feel good about now, but maybe you weren't sure you did it for the right reasons.
Yeah, I feel like I did it. Well, Jake just didn't like the way the law was written, not because for him, it didn't bother him. He didn't have like a pro gay marriage stance, but it wouldn't have bothered him, you know. So he was a little more liberal with that than I was.
Okay.
So I did. I can't.
But you guys at least aren't sitting with the regret that you voted against gay marriage.
Gosh. I mean, yes.
Even though you possibly could have, actually.
And I almost did. But then when I listened to Jake and talked to Jake about it, then I changed my opinion on it. And I thought, okay, you're right. Yeah, this law is not, it's not a good one. So I did. I voted against it.
Okay.
So, yeah, I do have regret that I didn't see it the way I should have seen it. But so, yeah, Ness and I were kind of arguing about that. And I was just saying, and so we both agreed, okay, well, at least we have something we can agree on, that it's awful that there's a group of people that don't have the same basic human rights that you and I have. So we ended it there. So okay. I called her from my closet floor at midnight my time, 10 o'clock her time, 9 or 10. She was in Arizona. And I just was crying. I was sobbing. And she was like, "Oh my gosh, what's happening? Are you okay? Is everything okay?" And I almost choked the words out. I was just this pain in my chest I had never felt before. And I just said, "John just told me that he's gay." And she was like, "Meg, I can help you." Those were the words that I needed to hear. And I just like relief flooded through me because I needed help. I said, "Okay, yes, tell me what can." She said, and she told me about how she'd been an ally for a year. She's like, "Oh my gosh, maybe I came across this a year ago. I stumbled across this because I need to be there for you. Meg, I'm here for you. I can help you. There's so much to know. I can give you so much reading material." And I was just like, "Vanessa, please, please, I need to learn everything I can." And I was just like, kind of like, it was like air. I was just, later on, I would think of her as like a scuba diver. I was just like drowning. I mean, at the time, I felt like the church was no longer life to me. It was a million gallons of water, and I could feel every ounce of pressure on my back. And I didn't like it, and I didn't want it. And so when she told me she could help me, she was sharing her oxygen with me, and I was just like, okay. So she gave me
Can I
every.
stop here for a second and
Oh,
just
yeah.
can I just point out just to anyone who's listening that the thing about being an ally is that your sister did something for you that was sort of irreplaceable,
Yeah.
and possibly the reason that she was able to do that was that she had spoken out even a few weeks before. And she wasn't defending any particular person, but she was speaking out for gay people in general. And because she did that, when the moment came, you kind of knew where to turn. And that just really is so important in our wards. If you're the only person in your ward who is an ally, if you make it known to the people in your ward that you're an ally, then when that person who absolutely needs you, when that young person or when that parent or whoever is struggling with this issue, they're going to know who to talk to if you kind of make yourself just a little bit visible as a sympathetic person. And the fact that your sister did that really, really illustrates that how important just speaking out once in a while can really do just to make it clear where you stand. That's what's so amazing about having an ally who's brave enough to be vocal about it. So I just wanted to throw that in there because I know some of the allies are hearing this podcast, and I just really want to thank them and just make them realize that here's an example. And I'm sure most of them already have personal stories about it, but that's just how it works.
Yeah, it was invaluable. There, you cannot put a price on what I needed in that hour and how it was fulfilled. You can't, I cannot even be grateful enough for the rest of my life. And I have a lot of sisters that, and a sister-in-law that I usually call when I'm having maybe low points or I'm having questions with my testimony or whatever. I'll call these particular sisters because they are spiritual giants and they always give me great counsel and they always put me right back on the right track. And it's interesting to me that I didn't think of them. I thought of Vanessa. And even I have a few other sisters that are very sympathetic toward the LGBT community. But I thought of Vanessa, and not knowing that she was an ally, but because she had been so forceful with me. So I thought she seems to know, you're exactly right. She spoke out, and she's who I went to. Yes, she was incredible. We spoke for a few hours, and she had told me
Like on the phone that night.
on the phone that night.
Oh,
And
so she gave you a crash course.
yes, she actually told me, she said, since I've been learning about this the last year, I've kind of been watching John, and I had some suspicions, Meg. I thought he might be gay, but I kind of was thinking I would have to hold that in for 10 more years, and when he finally did come out, that I would be there for you. And she said, "I cannot believe he just came out to you. He's 13 years old. And she was so proud of him, and she just kept saying, "This is amazing. This is so amazing. Do you know how much we can help him and how his life could be so much better?" And I was like, "No, I don't know, but will you tell me? Because you seem to know." So she said, "Okay, well, this is what the church says, and I've got so much I can send you." So she sent me. She started me off with MormonsandGays.org, which I'd never visited. I didn't know really about. She's like, "This is what the church says about it. Here are some LDS people who are LGBTQ, and they've started up websites. There's a website called No More Strangers and Affirmation, and these places I had never heard of." And she said, "There's just, oh my gosh, you have to know about Carolyn Pearson." And she's just like, she was just going crazy. And so she goes, "I'm going to compile everything into an email, and I'm going to send it to you. And you just start reading a little bit. You can't, I don't want to overwhelm you." So she started with like four things. She started with that, and
So with No More Strangers and Affirmation and some of Carolyn Pearson's, and what are some of the things that she really thought would be useful to you for to starting with?
yes. And she did.
Can you remember what some of those were specifically?
She sent me. She. I can't remember. Oh my gosh. She sent me to the affirmation website, and she said, "Just kind of look around and see if there's a story that maybe interests you. The titles are there." But she said she was going to start looking into specific stories that would speak to me specifically. She knew about
Okay.
Wendy Montgomery, but at the time she said, "I think there's another person out there that's like you." She has a son that's 13, and they just came out, and they've been very affirming to their child, and they came out and to the world. And I was like, "Oh gosh, that sounds like what John wants to do. Maybe I should talk to her." And
Okay.
but I hadn't read anything about Wendy from Wendy Montgomery at the time. But Anessa, she blasted out to all of her allies, "This is my sister. What, you know, give me some advice. What should I say? She's Mormon. She needs, whatever." So she sent this to me. She said, "I don't want to overwhelm you. Just kind of take it as you can. Read a bit and call me tomorrow." And she, at the end of it, she put on the documentary for The Bible Told Me So, because I was talking to her about doctrine, about scriptures. I said, "Vanessa, the Bible says it's an abomination. Like, what does that mean? John, what? No, he's perfect. And I was confused." And she said, "Well, there's this documentary that might be helpful. I'll add it to it. It's not necessarily the Mormon churches or anybody Mormon publishing it, or but it's very interesting. You might be interested in it." Then the next morning, we talked, and I said, "I just can't." I hadn't watched the documentary, but I said, I can't hear anything or see anything that like has to do with gays being killed or bullied or beat up. I can't just right now. I can't. I need to see hope." And so she said, "Okay, don't watch that documentary then," because she knew there was a little piece of it, talking about that. So I started reading. I just started reading and reading and reading. And Bryce Cook sent me an email because she had reached out to him, and he told me about his two gay sons and how they were returned missionaries. They both go to BYU, and that they're very affirming and very loving. And I was like, okay, we can work this out." And I watched It Gets Better from BYU, and I just started reading and reading and reading. And everything did. And I talked to my sister, like, 5, 6 hours a day. Anessa was like, she was amazing. She was so patient and loving, and just, and saying, "Well," she was so affirming. And I wish I could have recorded our conversations. I wish I could memorize what she had said. But she would, just say, "He can, Meg," like, because I was saying, "What about eternal perspectives?" And she said, "There's more to know. You just she said something so good, and I've repeated it a lot. She said, "Meg, you can't make God that small. You can't make him so small to think that he would create John a certain way and then punish him for it, like forever. You can't, or take some part away from him that is a part of him, that is who he is." And she would say things like that to me, and I'd say, "Oh, don't make God small. Well, that, okay, yeah, that makes sense. This can work out." So this was over a couple of days. Well, 2 days later, 2 days after John came out, I wrote a letter to my siblings because John wanted me to.
Yeah.
He wanted to start the process. He didn't want to spend any time in the closet. So here I am. Okay. So I wrote this to my siblings and I said, I don't know what this all means. I don't know where he'll will lead. I don't know if he'll stay in the church. I don't know if he'll go on a mission. He still wants to. You know, but he's 13. And what we need right now, though, is love. And if you have any support or anything, or if you know anything that could be supportive to us, I'd appreciate it. It was a big, long letter, but in a nutshell, I just said, if you could start a conversation with your children, a loving conversation about the LGBT community, then I'd greatly appreciate it. Well, I got a lot of positive responses after that. My siblings really came through. Talk about circling your wagons. John's got an army of aunts and uncles.
Yeah.
And cousins that'll do just that. And I mean, really true believing Mormons like just dropped their preconceived notions and loved their nephew. And for that, I'm really grateful. A lot of people didn't understand. They didn't have any way to help. They just wanted me to know they loved me and they loved John. And that was great. Some of my siblings were like, I can help you. They were so helpful and they sent me to even more reading material. But 2 days after he came out, right after that email, I was talking to my sister, another one of my sisters, Cammie. And this is when I kind of had like a huge aha moment and was able to just fluff off all the doctrine and just look at my child. Because I was still hung up on the doctrine for like a couple of days. I just couldn't get past that blockade in my brain.
Yeah.
I was talking to Cammie and Cammie said, what if they receive revelation that gay marriage is okay? And I was like, Cammie, the church is never going to change that. It doesn't change. Like, that would be great, but it's never going to change. I couldn't reconcile it. I was like, we're going to have to leave. I was prepared to leave so John wouldn't feel bad about himself, because I'd been reading all this stuff on affirmation, how bad these kids feel about themselves. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't want that for John. Let's just go. Let's just leave. And I was ready to do that. And I thought, I can always go back to the church when he's older. And that's fine with me. So Cammie said, they do change. You know, if they never did, the blacks wouldn't have the priesthood and we'd still be practicing polygamy. I don't know why it was so simple and I hadn't thought of it, but that was just kind of like, nope, I wasn't using Anessa's oxygen anymore. I broke right through that surface and was breathing on my own and realized, oh, God is here too. He's everywhere. And I couldn't see it. I had to kind of like break through on my own. I don't know. Something happened.
But this was crucial to you to just be reminded that there had been some important changes that people had believed were never going to come, but they did come.
Exactly.
That's sort of sunk in for you in this moment and gave you kind of hope.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. It was hope. I was like, oh, okay, this can work. This can be okay. And, you know, Jake, I instantly just got there. I was like, yeah, okay.
But let me just stop for a second and analyze this hope. This hope that this revelation will come partly comes in you gaining something that you now saw as true. And what you see as true is that John is okay being gay. And so this was something that where you had sort of accepted something as truth that you hadn't really accepted prior to that, that it could be okay in God's eyes that he's gay. And so for you to think, oh, okay, a revelation is bound to happen, you wouldn't think that unless you had come to really understand the idea or see it as truth that a revelation would be bound to happen, right? I mean, from your point of view, right?
Yeah, that's all. I think that was a good, that's really well put. I think it just planted a seed of hope. It planted this hope in me. I felt like I could breathe. It felt so good. And what she said felt right.
But I'm just comparing that to a different hope. because you could be have planted a hope. Oh, God will cure him, or God will remove this. There's a whole bunch of perspectives you could have come out of that with hope about, right?
I suppose so.
But you came out, I mean, you went with the one that seemed true to you based on what you knew about your son, based on what your heart was telling you, right? And
Right. So.
so you came to a conclusion that to you rang the most true. And therefore, if it's true, then from that point of view, it seems, and I think, you know, we it's hard for us to sit here and know if a revelation is going to come, but it kind of makes it easy to hope for that because we're seeing something that is really obvious to us, that John is okay, that John is not innately evil, that John is loved by God, and that John wasn't meant to suffer because of some random rules created by society, right?
Yeah,
That,
that's exactly
so,
right.
so okay. I just really want to sort of dwell on that idea for a second, just for that reason, that it's a truth that's obvious and just needs, I guess, the church to catch up to it or something.
Yeah, and that really kind of is a beautiful segue into the next very next thing that
Okay,
happened.
but can I, before you go on with the sequence of events, in the meantime, or do you want to come back to this? In the meantime, you know, you were, how was your interactions with John going on in these days while you're going through this journey?
Well, okay.
Or do you
So
want to come back to that?
no, let's do that. That's good. So, the before John went to bed, he asked Jake and I to do one thing. He said, "I've been talking to Andy online, and he told me that Andy had shared with him a story of kind of coming out to God, and how God had told had just affirmed that that was okay, and that he was good, that he loved Andy no matter what." And John said, "I did this too, and Heavenly Father told or let me know that I feel I am loved and I'm okay, and that this is okay, that there's nothing wrong with this. This is just who I am." And I was just like, "Oh wow!" I was so again. I've always been so impressed with
So
him.
let's repeat that. This is incredible. So Andy basically bore his testimony about his personal experience that he had had about asking God about this issue. And Andy did what all Mormons do or are taught to do, which is to bear his testimony about it to someone who needed to hear it. And so your son, on hearing that testimony, he went and decided to get his own testimony about this, that God loves him. And so John told you, and John shared with you that he really did get that answer from God, that he had a confirmation, and that is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right.
And so how did that make you feel when John told you that?
I gave him a big hug and I told him I was so glad that yes, Heavenly Father does love him, that this is okay and we're gonna figure this out. I'm gonna learn as much as I can. And he asked me to, he's like, "Mom, look, just read the conversation that I had with Andy." It was a private messaging conversation with Andy over Facebook. And we have access to his Facebook account. I mean, we trust him. He's a good kid, but we just, I don't know, we just have his password. So I put him to bed, and that was the first thing that Jake and I did. We went and read the entire conversation between John and Andy. And I think at that point I was having hope that he might be bisexual and that somehow he'd be able to take the societal accepted path. And but during that conversation between he and Andy, and after reading that, Jake looked at me and he said, "Well, he's gay, Meg. Like that's he's gay." Because he went to bed so confused, thinking maybe he can try to be bisexual, or maybe he can maybe make it work with his with somebody. Somebody will marry him, and he was just trying, and he was trying to push down his inner self to make me happy. And I just said, "Nope, we will have none of that." I woke him up the next morning and I said, "John, I've got some great news for you." And he was like, "What?" And I said, "You're gay." I was like, "You don't have to question anymore, buddy. You don't have to live or try to like girls or try to change. You're gay, and that's okay." and we're going to just move forward with this, and we're going to learn about this. We're not going to have any more self-doubt, okay? And he just kind of like sighed, and he was like, okay, yeah, I think you're right. I know I'm gay.
Well, can we review this chain of events? Because this is pretty amazing. So in the first place, John wanted you to share this conversation he'd had with Andy. And I suppose that must have been helped you guys a lot, partly just to make sure that you guys were filling your parental duties to know, well, how did he know he was gay? And just by having him share with you the journey he took, and also to assure, to be clear what Andy had told him, because, you know, I'm sure you liked Andy, but it gave you the reassurance that what he was hearing was appropriate, right? That this wasn't Andy trying to push his agenda, that he was telling, and you came out of that feeling that it was okay. I mean, what mm-hmm. were the kinds of things that had you convinced that John was thinking thoughtfully and correctly about this, mm-hmm. and that he was getting information that was basically accurate? What were some of the things that sort of really impressed you about that conversation?
First and foremost, I was completely impressed with the way Andy handled it. Jake and I both went to bed that night just thinking, how could we ever repay him? That he was so loving and so caring and helped John through it. I mean, the conversation spanned over about a week, I think, a few days. And John was just kind of asking him initially, how did you know that you were gay? And Andy shared that and just told him that he'd known probably really since he was 5. He just didn't want to accept it. And Andy shared how he had suppressed it, how he hated it himself, how he pushed it aside. And he shared that he was there for him. He said, I'm willing to be open with it. John hadn't shared anything about himself. Andy just told John how he knew. And then,
so Andy told John his own personal experience.
Yes.
Okay. So Andy mm-hmm. wasn't there probing John. Oh, how do you feel?
No, he didn't even say, why are you asking this? He just said, sure, I'm happy to tell you anything you want to know. I don't know if he questioned if John was asking that because John thought he was gay, or maybe he just thought John just wanted to know, because if he was sure, how do you know? You were just dating my aunt.
Yeah.
I don't know what Andy thought. Andy didn't even ask. But John finally said, well, thank you for sharing that with me. And I think the next day he said, you know, I think I might be gay. And Andy was like, wow. You know, he was very careful. He said, I think I might be bisexual, or I don't know, what does that mean? I've taken some online tests, and everyone turns up bisexual. But so I guess John just kind of explained to him that he always thought that he liked girls, you know, because that was expected of him. But so many people had been asking him if he was gay. Something happened where he, I guess, noticed a cute boy, and he felt like he was on fire on his skin, on his arms. And he was like, oh gosh, you know, and he said,
now we're talking about John.
Yeah,
or
this
Andy?
Is John. And, okay. And this is John telling Andy. And he said, oh, this is what a crush feels like. Like, this is what liking someone feels like. He'd never felt that for a girl.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of the first clue, I think. And when he would, you know, he would think about guys, probably the way he should be thinking about girls. And so that just gave him some confusion. So he was explaining this to Andy, and Andy said, yeah, I can relate to that. You know, that is exactly what I thought, but I would push that away. And John's like, well, I kind of experimented, or not experimented with that. I kind of let my mind think these thoughts. And he kind of went toward it instead of running away from it, because he wanted to know. He wanted to be, he wanted to be sure. So he started reading a bunch of stuff online and just kind of like doing some research, you know, I guess visiting sites that say, I think I might be gay. I'm a teenager. Okay. What does that mean? And, you know, and Andy just told him that to not be ashamed of it, basically, that it's just a part of him. It's a part of Andy, and it's a part of John, and that John needs to kind of really think about it. He was so thoughtful, though.
I just want to clear away what some critics might be concerned about.
Please,
and so through that conversation that you were able to read the entire thing to start with. So it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't some hidden thing that was kept in the closet anyway. And through that conversation, you didn't see at any time that Andy was trying to convince John that John was gay?
Oh my gosh, no. Actually, quite the opposite. Not that Andy was trying to convince him that he wasn't, but he was just more saying, wow, that's, you're so brave, you're so mature that you're confronting these feelings and thoughts about yourself. He was more commending John, saying that John is handling this with the maturity that Andy wished he always had had, that he was just addressing it. So Andy was really, you know, he never tried to convince him, but he would just listen, and he would say, well, what, you know, why do you think this, and what do you think about this, and, you know, don't.
And you didn't see him doing any inappropriate talk or any sexual talk or nothing like that?
No.
Right? Yeah, okay.
Not at all. I mean, Andy's an RM. He's like a super good guy. If in Mormon terms, this is a returned missionary, and they're supposedly like the best guys on the planet.
Yeah. But Andy was maintaining that standard. He was just being absolutely appropriate, correct, and you just didn't get any, it didn't enter your head that Andy was putting on John his stuff and
I'm trying
to recruit him
I'm trying to kind of preserve John's privacy here a little bit, so I can't go into full detail, but yes, I just maybe can say with complete assurity and confidence and very comfortable that Andy was very appropriate. Now, you have to know, I am a very protective mom. I've raised John in a traditional Mormon way. I was conservative. It's not like I would have just let anybody just influence my child. I felt really comfortable with how Andy handled it, and I was really glad for Andy, because Andy came with the perspective of a gay person and did help and affirm John's feelings, but he in no way whatsoever tried to convince John that he actually was gay. And he even told John, you know, because John was like, well, what if I am bisexual? And he said, I know some bisexual people, you know, and maybe you are. You really, you know, he's like, everybody has their own personal journey and you'll have to figure yours out. He said, I even thought maybe at one point that I could be bisexual, but it did turn out that I was gay. And, you know, he did talk about the years that he spent kind of hating himself. And when he was affirmed and loved by God, that was like the most powerful moment of his life. So he didn't say, John, I think you should do that. He just told John about that. So John, on his own, went and did that.
Yeah.
I really don't think there was even one sentence of suggestion throughout that whole conversation, actually.
Uh-huh.
I could go back and confirm that, but I really...
Yeah, but I mean, but the point is, I mean, it's the overall tone that really is important. And obviously you guys were going in there worried about your son, and you would have been all over it if there had been something that you thought was inappropriate.
Oh yeah.
And it wasn't. And that's nice. I mean, I'm glad John found someone like that at that time in his life, that there was a person there who had the maturity to be able to handle that conversation in a way that's helpful without being, you know, letting your own issues muddy the waters, right? And
exactly.
And it's fair to talk about your own experience. I mean, if John's asking Andy and Andy tells him about his experience, you know, that's also absolutely correct, you know.
And that's really what John wanted to know. I don't think he was trying to take Andy's example. He just wanted to kind of match up Andy's example to see if it maybe matched his. Say, oh, is somebody else thinking this? Because I think like this. Is someone else, is this what they felt? You know.
Right.
So, John.
Yeah, well, I mean, thanks for dwelling on that a little, because I just know that people are ready to jump on you guys and say, you know, how can you let your 13-year-old decide he's gay?
Right. I've had that question a lot, actually.
So that's kind of why I want to really present to the audience, well, you guys did your duty and finding out where he got the information and reviewing it. And John was really open with you guys about what his mindset was and what his learning curve was. And so,
And that was so helpful to me too. Reading that conversation, because then I was just like, I could put away, hope of him potentially being bisexual or hope of him, you know, maybe being confused and maybe not being sure or maybe not understanding. I could read that conversation and be like, oh yeah, John's gay. Like there's,
because you could see the information that led him to believe that. And the information was not only compelling to John, but it was compelling to you.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
was
it was
compelling
really
to Jake.
Helpful.
It was compelling to all three of you. When you really saw the way he was framing it and the information he was taking to make that decision and to see it all played out in a conversation, that convinced three people, John, his mom, and his dad, right?
Yes. After that, we all, I didn't question, Jake didn't question. We didn't have to have any more questions. We kind of knew what we were looking at, what it really was, and now we can learn, and now we can move forward. We don't even have to, it's kind of nice, actually, to kind of know where you stand. And I think that's probably really comforting to John, too, is I know where I stand. I know who I am. And, yeah, Andy helped him, but he really did kind of learn on his own. I'm just really grateful for Andy. I think that I could not have helped him the way Andy did. I couldn't have been able to relate to that. But yeah, they talked for a week, and then John told me. I mean, like, John found out, John kind of questioned it, asked Andy about his experience, tried to mirror it to his own, and then told me, you know, and after research and stuff like that. Just, he really wanted to be sure. And then my crying and asking if he was sure kind of maybe made him question for a minute. Like, okay, maybe I can. And he did say the next morning, you know, he didn't like that that I cried so much and that he didn't know how well it went over. And he also was talking to my sister, Kylie, because he was wondering what Kylie thought about it because she knew a gay person. I didn't, you know. And she was just like, oh, my Johnny boy, I love you so much. And you're perfect. And, you know, she was really, really affirming to him because he went to her next.
You mean after Andy or after you guys?
After Andy.
Okay, so he actually told your sister before he told you.
He did. He said, I would like to tell my, you know, she said, you think you should tell your parents? And Andy encouraged him to talk to his parents. Kylie encouraged him to talk to us. And he said, no, I am. I will. I just want to make sure about some things first, you know. And so she was just kind of a soft place to land for him, an aunt to tell him
nice.
He was okay. Yeah, so it was really nice. They have a really special bond. So yeah, here are two people that have been dealing with the gay thing, you know, and so he felt like he could go to them and talk to them about it. What did they think? And Kylie just told him that.
And Kylie had sort of, I mean, she had been engaged to Andy, so
yeah.
She had kind of moved past the pain of that.
Mm-hmm.
Event and can face John without being bitter about the whole gay thing.
Yeah, because a couple of months had gone by and they had moved on from, you know, heartbreak to best friends. And
okay.
She became Andy's biggest ally and fiercest protector.
So that's nice.
Yeah, they have a great relationship, a great friendship. And so she was coming from a really good place by the time John had come to her.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know what's funny is that she called me right after Andy came out to her, hysterically crying, so devastated, so sad. And I even said this to her. I said, Kylie, what if you're going through something like this to be able to help somebody someday, sometime in the future, like a nephew or a niece or a friend or a... I'm not kidding. I said that to her.
Wow.
So, and what do you know? It happened. Like, I think she was prepared to help John. And she did. She gave him a really soft place to land. She could tell him that he's her Johnny boy and she loves him no matter what. And so really she just gave him love and affirmation. And I think John thought it would go better because he wanted me to read the conversation that he had with Kylie too. And I read the conversation the next day and he had messaged her and said, so I told my mom it didn't go so well. And I was thinking, I was thinking it went great. And that's when it kind of stopped me in my tracks and realized, get over yourself. This is not about you. Like he's receiving some, you're putting out something that he's receiving a different way. So
yeah.
I was so glad I got this insight. I got to see his private thoughts in these conversations have really helped me in how I handled it, him, and how it checked me. Kind of check yourself, you know?
Yeah.
I'm thinking I'm being like super good about it. And to him, it was like, oh, this isn't going so great. There were a lot of tears. And Kylie was like, oh, no, I'm so sorry, but I know she still loves you. And he said, oh, of course, yes, she still loves me. But she's crying a lot. So that's when I was like, yeah, no more tears, no more tears for you, Meg. We're going to strap on our can-do attitude and we're going to figure this out. So
okay.
That's when I was like, started reading. Like, I mean, like, I maybe got half hour sleep a night. I read all night, all day, read everything I could on affirmation, on no more strangers. And then my sister Anessa sent me the book, No More Goodbyes, Circling Our Wagons Around Her, Carolyn Pearson's book.
Thank you for joining us today on Gay Mormon Stories. To discuss this episode with others, please check us out at gaymormonstories.org. If you want to see the podcast continue, please consider making a monthly donation today at gaymormonstories.org. Music for this podcast was graciously donated by Nabby Parkinson Folk and Ricky Parkinson.
That thou hast shown, pause to help and lift another, finding strength beyond my own. Savior, may I learn to love thee, Lord. I would follow thee, to judge.